opinionated people, welcome back to Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I'm your host, Claire Malky. That last sticky packing peanut you swear you threw away weeks ago. Still around. Thank you so much to everyone who tuned in last week for our season opener. It feels so good to be back in the Sit Still studio, and I am pumped to share this amazing season with you all. As you heard last week, we've started our very own newsletter, which you can subscribe to by visiting our website, www.sitstillpodcast.com. The newsletter graciously flows into your inbox on Wednesday mornings. And if you've ever wondered what I do on Tuesday nights, it's right said newsletter. We're making big moves here, people. Speaking of moving, I recently moved to a new apartment in Chicago. The best part about moving is the fresh start that a new living space can offer. A blank space to create the living room of my Pinterest board dreams. A new beginning to definitely not kill my pothos plant. And a promise to myself that I will do the dishes in a timely manner, no matter what. The worst part about moving was going through all my shit. Unsettling the calm that was my somewhat former bedroom was like awakening a volcano that had been dormant for 100 years. Explosive. Packing my life into boxes had me deeply pondering why I own so much junk. There are some of those items that I take from apartment to apartment that I just don't understand why I can't get rid of them. Like the excessive number of shot glasses I acquired throughout college that are now just acquiring dust. Could I get rid of them, you ask? Well, yes, duh, I obviously could get rid of them. But what about all the memes? Those shot glasses shot me into adulthood. They paved the way for poor decision-making during my early 20s. They single-handedly taught me how to get a hangover. They're practically family. Putting my life into flimsy storage boxes also got me thinking about sustainability. It felt so wrong to buy packing paper and cardboard boxes that I knew I would probably just end up throwing them away. Okay, yes, I would put them in the recycling, but like, does recycling actually work? I've worked so many service jobs where when you take out the recycling, it just all goes in the trash. I don't know about you, but that's just my experience. Anyway, the whole thing seemed like a total waste for my wallet and the planet. The one thing I did have going for me was that I've kept every single piece of tissue paper I've ever been given, and I have an obscene number of duffel bags, so ultimately I didn't really need that many boxes. It all worked out in the end, but it just made me wonder, what can I do to be more sustainable and promote anti-climate change? Because all I know is I will never be rich enough to move planets if that's what the world comes to. That'll only be Jeff Bezos. We have an amazing show for you all today. We have Emily McKinnon, a volunteer organizer from Sunrise Movement Chicago, with us today in the Sit Still studio. Make sure you stick around. Today, I am drinking some homemade fizzy water from my soda stream. Go grab your drink and let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. Las Vegas police found 30 boa constrictors in a house before determining nothing was amiss, since all the snakes were white. Taxis in Thailand are planting miniature gardens on their roofs, which inspired the Hollywood cult classic sequel, Snakes on a Cab. Hundreds of migrating songbirds died in NYC this weekend after flying into skyscrapers. So far, only 4 of them have been linked to the Taliban. COVID has now officially killed as many people as the 1918 flu, but has yet to party like it's 1999. California Governor Gavin Newsom managed to avoid being recalled last week, mostly thanks to his new slogan, "How do you like dem nuts?" The U.S. booster policy is in flux as scientists continue to dissent, which sounds awfully similar to TGI Friday's booster seat policy also being in dissent. I don't care that I'm not a toddler anymore. I like looming over my food as I eat, damn it. A doctor in Texas defied the state's new ban by performing an abortion. He also defied the state's fashion trends by wearing socks with sandals. Nabisco factory workers ended their strike by signing a new contract. Bonuses will be double stuffed. Cookies rule everything around me, cream in the Oreos, double, double stuff, y'all. I think that's how it went. France protested the recent nuclear sub deal between the US and Australia. One French naval admiral defected, saying, "Whatever, our sub fleet is little if you soggy baguettes." Metallica announced a same-day show at an intimate Chicago venue for only $20. Napster will pay fans $20 to set the building on fire. Starting in November, the U.S. will allow vaccinated foreign travelers to enter the country. The opening ceremonies will be sponsored by Ja Rule. Hashtag Dumpster Fire Fest. To end COVID, Biden can't decide whether to follow bureaucratic procedures or take a defining stance. I also can't decide to either make dinner or order Taco Bell. Again. Pfizer announced its COVID vaccine is safe for children ages 5 to 11 and will seek FDA approval. Vaccines will be distributed by ice cream trucks that also sell fireworks. Because of this, the U.S. plans to have millions of kids vaccinated by Halloween, making this the first Halloween where kids should expect to find needles in their bags. People in Germany can visit COVID testing sites at abandoned nightclubs at no charge. Usually it costs a wink and a drink to get something swabbed in there. Halloween is right around the corner. So, will the anti-maskers be sitting this one out? An erupting volcano in the Spanish Canary Islands has forced authorities to evacuate another village in the path of the lava. So, who had volcanic eruption on their world is ending bingo card? Justin Trudeau has narrowly won a third term as the Prime Minister of Canada, due to his prime demographic of thirsty moms. Sudan's leader has linked a failed coup to forces of darkness. And yet, Lord Voldemort claims he was in Cancun. A new study shows that entry-level jobs are disappearing, many now requiring prior experience. Ugh, tell me about it. When I applied for this job, I had to already have hosted a successful podcast for at least 10 years, have a master's in psychology, and be present at the birth of no less than 2 cow babies. And that's this week's headlines.
Boils my blood, Minnie. I tell ya, it really busts my oversized buttons.
Oh no, Mickey, we talked about this.
No, Bezos thinks going to space makes him hot shit. Well, I own fucking Loki. Time and space, Bezos, you bitch.
Is your billionaire husband pushing away loved ones because of his growing resentment towards Jeff Bezos?
Does he fly into a jealous rage about how he should have been the first billionaire into space every time astronaut or Amazon gift cards are brought up? Reintroducing Space Mountain, a ride that still exists, by Disney.
Trick your billionaire buddy into realizing he's just as good as any asshole CEO. Yeah.
This out updated ride has a no-line guarantee, or your money back.
In the form of Disney dollars.
Which are also useless.
Golly, Minnie, look at me. I'm really going to space. Suck my rat tail, Jeff.
Have fun, Mickey. Hope you don't burn up on re-entry.
Woohoo!
So instead of ending that friendship you have no emotional stake in...
or calling that guy you hired to murder your husband 10 years ahead of schedule because you don't care about the prenup anymore, you're just sick of hearing about his rich white mouse guy problems!
Taking it space without me!
Did you see me? I really went to space, just like that hairless mole rat! Say, you know what? I think I'll start paying my theme park workers a living wage!
Thanks, Space Mountain.
Space Mountain? Because with Galaxy's Edge, you give a shit about this ride!
It looks like the pandemic is here to stay. Just like your cousin who said they only needed to crash on your couch until they got their feet on the ground. So, we thought we'd bring in a special guest to clear up any misinformation. She's popular, she's the president of her sorority, and her energy is infectious. Give it up for Sister Delta Variant!
Well, hi, Claire. Good to see you. Again.
Oh, you've been mistaken. We've definitely never met.
Well, that's what you think.
I wear a mask and always social distance in public.
Oh, sweetie, those things make it hard for us to connect, but I love a good challenge.
I'm flattered, but I identify as a science believer, and I got the vaccine, so it would never work.
So quick to judge, Claire. We would definitely have a super fun, normal night on the town.
Probably not. Anyway, Delta, can you introduce yourself for all of our listeners who aren't familiar with you or who just don't think you're real?
Of course. I'm Delta Variant. I won Most Contagious at my sorority's formal last year. I'm the socialite that shows up to just about any event uninvited.
Isn't that a little rude to show up to parties unannounced?
No, I mean, if the entire world won't shut up about me, that's pretty much an oral invite to attend literally any event.
Okay, I get that logic. So where have you gone?
Oh, you know, the usual. The quad, library study sessions, dorm keggers. But now I've been spicing it up, going places like football tailgates, late-night club meetings. Heck, I even went to a funeral last week. And everyone kept saying, Delta this, Delta that. You would have thought I was the one who died.
A funeral? That's depressing. Why would you choose to go to that?
Word on the street is that there's a lot of hugging and kissing at funerals. Lots of ways to get some inheritance, if you know what I mean.
Gross. So, how did you find out about all of them? Facebook posts?
No, I just have really loyal friends. They're easy to spot in a crowd, too, because they're never wearing a mask. Also, they always defend me when people are starting to gossip about me.
Oh, well, that's really nice of them. So, that means they're probably also super good friends with Lambda Variant, too, right?
Ew, no! Claire! How dare you speak of her! She and I couldn't be more different.
Seriously?
Yes. I'm recognized by the who, obvi, and she's not. Lambda thinks she's so cool just because she's from South America or whatever. Well, you know what? She can have my sloppy seconds. Whatever doesn't catch me obviously isn't worth it.
I didn't realize Lambda would be such a touchy subject.
Well, now you know. Gosh, such a mask mouth move.
Excuse me, what the heck is a mask mouth?
Someone exactly like you. Someone who's unaware of the facts. Someone who gives terrible interviews. You're even more of a mask mouth because you suffocate all the fun. It's almost like you want me to disappear for good.
I mean, not a bad thought.
That's it. I'm out of here. And you better watch out, Miss I Host a Podcast I'm So Cool. I'm gonna cancel you faster than Chris Harrison from The Bachelorette. Your Twitter feed is about to explode. Outie!
Sister Delta Variant, everyone.
please wear a mask and get the vaccine. Okay, Mike, I think I need to get a PCR test, like, right now.
Great news, everyone. We have new staff writers this season. We were able to hire them through your support from Patreon. To keep our writers on our team, please consider subscribing to our Patreon. Thanks so much to our patrons, Sam, Laura, Andy, Christina, Anthony, and Anna. Hope to add your name next week. For more information, find us at patreon.com/sitstillpodcast. Up next, my interview with Emily McKinnon. For this week's interview, we have Emily McKinnon. Emily is a volunteer organizer with Sunrise Movement. Thank you so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated.
Hi, Claire. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I'm super excited to talk about Sunrise today. Even though I just introduced you, could you give us a little bit about your background and who you are?
Yeah, sure. So like Claire said, my name is Emily McKinnon, and I'm a volunteer organizer with Sunrise. And so I guess what that kind of means is I joined Sunrise as an organization, and Sunrise Chicago specifically is a group of young people basically fighting against climate change and fighting to hold our politicians accountable to taking action against climate change, and also fighting to spread awareness and getting the broader public to understand and know what's happening, and also advocate for big solutions to fixing climate change. And so then where I fit into all of that is I joined the Chicago chapter, or the Chicago hub of Sunrise Movement, and have been doing a variety of different things, basically helping out wherever I can to help us achieve our goals. So organizing is a little bit weird if you've never done it before, it's kind of like, what is that? So when I say I'm an organizer, a lot of the time people are like, yeah, but what does that mean? What do you actually do? What we actually do is basically whatever it takes to hold our politicians accountable. So on the political side of things, I've been involved with planning phone banking to reach voters in specific districts to elect a Green New Deal champion in that district, coming up with visual communications for our Instagram and our social media of tweeting different things related to bringing awareness to certain politicians not being accountable to issues. I actually did during the November election, I did an Instagram story about the importance of early voting. So things like that. And then more on the organizing and people side, a lot of it is recruiting, canvassing, talking to people, organizing those canvasses, pretty much whatever you can think of to get people aware and to hold politicians accountable, we do it. So it's been a really exciting, fun year for me. It's been a hard year in terms of organizing wins, but I'm excited to be here and talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah, that sounds like a whole slew of tasks and roles that you all take on. How did you discover Sunrise Movement, and why were you drawn to their initiatives?
Yeah, so actually, I don't really come. So I had never really come from a formal organizing background. My parents never did community organizing, didn't really know what that was. But I'd always cared about specific issues in theory. I'm like, yeah, we should stop climate change. Yeah, you know, we should help solve homelessness, address racial inequality. I'd always been for those issues, but I had never really known how to take that and put it into action. And so one of my close friends from college, Carolyn, she became involved with Sunrise Movement pretty close to the Chicago Hub's founding back in early 2019, I believe. And she had been telling me like, hey, like, you should just come to a meeting. And to be honest, I kind of felt a lot of imposter syndrome because I was like, look, like, I care about these things, but I'm definitely the person that's not the most educated. I'm not the person, I haven't been on the front lines of this fight. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't even know what organizing is. Like, don't really feel comfortable. And so she kept saying, just come to a meeting. And so finally I went to a meeting. I didn't understand anything that was going on, but I kept showing up, and I eventually started just raising my hands for things. They're like, hey, we want to meet with other hubs and see what they've done to start up a local Green New Deal initiative. So I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I can go. I can take notes. I know I can do that. And slowly but surely, I kept doing things like that and raising my hand. And then now I'm at the point where I've pretty much anything that you can imagine in terms of organizing, I have been a part of. And it was something that I feel really blessed to have been sort of, we call it organized in by a fellow organizer in through relational organizing, because I mean, at its core, community organizing is really about people and showing up for your community. So a lot of the way that Sunrise Chicago works specifically is it's all about building relationships in terms of getting people to show up. It's about knowing and understanding the specific needs of that person in their community and understanding and showing respect, building trust, and then bringing people in, teaching them the skills that they need to be successful, and then letting them succeed. And then also another big part of organizing and activism and making a difference in general is just showing up. And so that's kind of what I did as well. I just kept showing up to meetings. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to try. And in the end, that's what I think really got me more into the hub. And so I guess, so that was kind of more about me specifically, but talking a little bit more about Sunrise Chicago, and what I like about Sunrise Chicago is, so more broadly, the climate justice movement. So there's kind of been several flaws that Sunrise's sort of movement ideology and theory of change of previous environmental movements, in the fact that a lot of previous environmental movements, sort of thinking about the, what's the movie, Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth, they focused a lot on sort of these like macro, kind of less personal aspects of climate change that were like, oh, the polar bear swimming around. And to be honest, that's a heart-wrenching image. And I know that there's a lot of people that started paying attention to the climate change movement and became actively involved in this fight from movies like that, where it was very much focused on these very broad, like, oh, like the turtles are dying, like kind of things, which, again, no shade to the people that wanted to join the movement because of that. But when you don't center people and the impact of climate change on people and communities, it's harder for people to really see that, you know, climate change is going to affect everyone. And climate change is going to affect everyone. And it's going to affect the people that who have the least, the worst. And so in the past, a lot of the times when these environmental movements focused on this, they weren't connecting how stopping climate change is meeting the immediate physical needs of the people that are, or that are affected by it. So I guess it's like, it's basically like, why do I care that the ice caps are going to melt in 20 years if I can't put food on the table now, or my kid is suffering from asthma because there's a polluter next door? So Sunrise was kind of born out of this idea that, on one hand, previous environmental movements were environmental movements. They weren't environmental justice movements. They were movements that really centered kind of this white privileged idea of the impacts of climate change and this climate anxiety that a lot of people who do have the money and resources to not be directly impacted by, you know, flooding or fires or risk being a climate refugee would be able to relate to, which again, it brought people in, but it didn't bring everyone in. And then the also another issue that we saw in these environmental movements is a lot of times they focused on the science. Oh, just trust the science and all of that. But Sunrise was born out of this, you know, the science all says it. Like anyone that we're convincing, like with science, has already been convinced by the science. So what we need to say is we need to first bring a youth voice into this movement, because the youth voice has been missing as well in this fight. And we need to be actively combative and be this moral voice of saying, it doesn't really matter the science. I don't need to know the exact degrees Celsius. Like, I don't need to know the parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. I don't need to know all that. All I know that this is happening. It is affecting me. It is affecting my future and my life and my livelihood. And the leaders in charge are not doing anything about it. And shame on them for that. And so to really be this moral voice of youth that is this cross-section of environmental justice and, you know, saying, all right, we need to bring everyone into this movement because this issue is going to affect everyone, as well as being not afraid to be combative and say, you know, our politicians, our leaders are not doing enough. We are not doing enough. It doesn't matter the science. We don't need to educate people more on science. Like, we need to take action. And so that's really, I think, the sunrise, like, sort of overall in a nutshell, why we are here and what we are trying to do. And I guess I'll stop there. I rambled on a little bit with this question.
No, that was lovely. And it's so interesting that you brought up the science element of it, because when I think back to, like, maybe being in, like, middle school or in, like, early high school, it was like, oh yeah, if you cared about the environment, you, like, were like a tree hugger and, like, super mm-hmm. cared about animals. And, like, yeah, it was to do it to protect the turtles. It wasn't to protect your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And I find it really interesting about, you know, the science is great, but it's like, if you can't put food on the table, why do you care about the polar bears? Yeah. And with the aspect of youth being involved, is Sunrise Movement mostly, like, for youth, or is it for everyone? Like, can anyone join?
Yes. So Sunrise Movement is a youth-led organization. So what we define youth as is 13 mm-hmm. through 35. 35-year-old plus are welcome to join. However, I actually don't know the exact process. It is meant to be a youth-led, youth-driven organization. So the folks that are 35 plus are really more in support or advisory roles than actually taking the reins and leading the movement.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's really cool that it is youth-driven, because what do they always say? Like, the youth is the, like, tomorrow's leaders or something like that. There's always
Exactly. And because it's true, like, and you see it with Greta Thunberg too, is a mm-hmm. lot of her rhetoric is around, you know, you are wasting my future. And I'm just a kid. And even I know better, or, like, even I know that this is happening, this is a problem, but I can't do anything about it. Why are you not doing anything about it? And I think too, and we've talked about this as Sunrise, is as a kid, you can get away with calling people out in a way mm-hmm. that adults can't, you know, like, when it's a 15-year-old yelling at you, it looks a lot like, if you're a politician, it looks a lot worse to yell back at them than as if it were just an adult, you know?
So that's so true.
That messaging in there too. We understand, like, we're a moral voice. Like, if a kid can understand it, why can't a politician?
That's such a great visual. I would love to see an image of like that, you know, more in the media. How was it organizing during the pandemic? Were you all active during this ongoing time, or, I mean, over the last 18 months? What's all that been like?
Yeah. So with the pandemic, so I actually joined actually right in the middle of the pandemic. And so pandemic, a lot of Zoom meetings. Mm-hmm. So organizing during the pandemic was tough in some ways and better in others. So a lot of the time, like I said, organizing is about relationships and building relationships and trust. And not being in person with people, it is a lot harder to build mm-hmm. that sense of trust. I mean, you can still get things done, but someone doesn't really know who you are as a person. And that is, it's harder to get things to build those relationships in that way, because relationships are what keep people in the movement and allow them to grow and get better. However, in some ways, in terms of accessibility to meetings and our member base, we actually had so many more people join our meetings that were on Zoom, because instead of, you know, folks having to, you know, work and then commute and then not being available, a lot of, especially folks that were able to work remote, and honestly, some folks that were unemployed, unfortunately, during the pandemic, mm-hmm. Were able to be a part of our movement in a way, and be able to commit time to our movement in a way that really wasn't possible before the pandemic. And, like, I honestly, there's another whole other commentary in there about how capitalism exhausts us. So we are unable to give time and to actually change our world. We're so busy maintaining our basic needs. But that was exciting to see. I mean, again, also I did join during the pandemic too. So it's it is possible to bring people in and achieve things. But especially a lot of what Sunrise is known for is sort of big in-person actions and sort of combative actions. And so we weren't really able to do those as much in the summer. And especially too with the Black Lives Matter movement taking precedence, mm-hmm. we focused our support on supporting that movement because that was the right move at the time. But again, like, and again, all of these issues are connected. I mean, you can't have climate justice without racial justice. Like, you can't have housing equality without racial equality and climate. Like, all of these issues are also interconnected. So that was, it was important for us to show up for that movement over the summer. And then as we got into the fall, we were able to do limited in-person actions, mostly outside our representative's house. We would these things called wake up actions, where we would go and bang loud pots and pans and ask the politicians to wake up to the threat of climate change. And so we're able to do a little bit of that, but it hasn't been until recently that we've really gotten back to our full sort of in-person schedule, just because of, unfortunately, concerns of the pandemic.
Yeah. What was that wake up experience like? Like, that sounds kind of fun, actually, like going and banging pots and pans.
Yeah. So actually, unfortunately, I was not at that one, but it was I believe we were targeting Mike Madigan. So if you don't know, Mike Madigan was the Illinois Speaker of the House. He was the longest serving Speaker of the House in a state legislature in the entire country. And a lot of times people think like, oh, like, Democrats are good, like, in terms of Democrats are better on climate change than Republicans. And that is the case in general, but there are some Democrats that really are worse than others. And unfortunately, Mike Madigan is basically, a lot of his really close circle was indicted on bribery and corruption charges from ComEd, the largest electric utility in Illinois, which is unfortunately not doing so great on implementing clean energy goals. Yeah. And I'm not an expert on that, so I can't give you the numbers, but they're basically, even my own experience, I tried to sign up for this program called Community Solar, which you basically buy the rights to a solar panel wattage, and you basically allow yourself to just get clean energy without having to buy your own solar panels. And they made it so difficult for me. But that's a tangent. Anyways, so yeah, Mike Madigan, very, very corrupt official. And because the Speaker of the House is able to decide what bills get heard and what bills get voted on, he basically has been stonewalling climate legislation at the Illinois statewide level for a long time. And so there's this bill called CEJA that had sort of been in the works, been broadly supported by a lot of environmental justice, by a lot of labor groups, by a lot of different, it's a huge coalition, the Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition. And Madigan's basically was stonewalling that, and also just very corrupt in other ways. So we went to his house, brought some pots and pans, like tried to wake him up. And I gave a speech and had a rally outside of his house to sort of talk about and educate and tell stories about why this is so bad. Why, like, it's not just, oh, he's blocking a bill in the house. It's because this bill is not passed, you know, we won't have access to the money to build the solar plants we need to power the energy needs that we will have as a state. I mean, the coal plants are not going to get shut off, and we're going to build more of them, which will make it even harder to get these dirty energy polluters replaced. And so basically trying to tell all of that and then relate that back to how it impacts us and our communities. So I thought it was really cool. I think there was a lesson learned from that action for us specifically, because, you know, as organizers, we're not perfect. We're always learning. Mm-hmm. We do some things right. We do other things wrong, but we learn from them. Is we actually didn't have a lot of media at that protest. Mm. And I think one of the things that would have made it more effective is if we had full media. And we actually got calls from media outlets afterwards saying, hey, like, we saw this on, like, because we had invited one reporter that we had sort of trusted, because I think at the time there was worries, especially over the summer with the Black Lives Matter protests, the cops, the way that cops were treating journalists was not great, and treating protesters was not great. So there was some worry about police interference there. So that's why we only told one reporter we trusted. But after seeing her images and the videos that we created, some reporters were like, hey, like, next time you're doing something like that, tell us, like, and we'll show up and we'll get it on the news. And so there was, again, we're all learning here. We welcome everybody with all levels of experience to organizing, but that's something that would have been really cool as well. But you can always look back and say what you could do better. So,
yeah, that's so true about anything, especially if you're starting something from the ground up or something that's newer in development.
Yeah. So I think especially my decision to sort of first join a meeting and really get more involved was especially during the pandemic. It became very apparent to me in a lot of different ways that there was all this suffering going on around me and that I felt so helpless. I felt like I was a person who actually probably wasn't suffering as much as most people, to be quite honest. I was relatively neurotypical, relatively class privileged. I was able to work from home, but I have all these values of, you know, I really want to make the world a better place for people. And so again, I just felt so helpless. I felt every day I would scroll through Twitter. And honestly, I think I cried every day at one point. Mm-hmm. And especially too, seeing the Black Lives Matter protests, like just seeing all of this pain and this injustice in so many different ways and just feeling powerless to stop it was really hard. And so one of the things that was just great about Sunrise and community organizing in general is even if it was little things we were doing, I felt like I was doing something. And that to me, I think really, really kept me sane and brought me out of kind of a dark place in the little bit of the middle of the pandemic, in the sense that I felt like I was taking all of this pain and shock and anger at seeing some of these injustices and actually funneling it towards something productive and funneling it towards something that was going to bring in a new world. And even if, you know, I did something and it only made the world better for like 10 people, that's still, I made the world better for 10 people. Mm-hmm. That's still something that makes me feel good. And so that for me, I think was especially like a very helpful, especially as too, like a lot of people come to community organizing from a place of direct impact. Some people are directly impacted by an environmental polluter moving into their neighborhood. Some people are directly impacted by flooding. And so that's great. And a lot of people have those stories. That wasn't my story, but it still didn't, like, it still was something that in organizing in general is still something that is incredibly meaningful to me, because it allows me to actively change my world and be from a place of passivity and be from a place or come from a place of not knowing what's like how I can change, and like being so upset to a place and being frozen to a place mm-hmm. of change. And so that to me was really special. And I'm really glad I joined because I was able to get all of that out of this.
So you had mentioned that Sunrise Chicago has a hub here in Chicago, and something that we do like to talk about are politics. And has Sunrise done anything on the local level? Have there been any examples of work on the local level?
Yeah. So Sunrise Chicago wasn't directly leading this charge. We are part of a larger coalition of folks working on something. So that issue actually was the Stop General Iron Movement, Stop Southside Recycling. So the long and short of it is, for many years in Lincoln Park, which is a white affluent neighborhood on the north side, housed this metal shredder called General Iron. And General Iron was a notorious polluter, constantly cited by the EPA, all of that. It was just not great to live near. And it was a bad neighbor. And it caused health issues for those around that area. And so with the advent of this development, mega development that the city has in the works called Lincoln Yards, which is about billions of dollars, many of mm-hmm. the public money, they wanted to put up this huge development in that area where that shuttered plant was. And so the city cut a deal, Rahm Emanuel's in administration, backroom deals, and they were like, okay, they basically promised to the owner of this plant, Southside Recycling, hey, move this plant to the southeast side and it'll be great. Like, we'll approve the permit. It'll all be good. Like, you'll still be able to make your money, but we want to put our development here. The white residents don't like it and they have influence. Great. And so the southeast side is primarily Latino. It's right near the Indiana border and it is already mm-hmm. chock full of factories and pollutants. If you're standing on Lake Michigan on a clear day and you look down right around the southeast side, it's just, you can see the smokestacks. And mm-hmm. 90%, and it's so the proposed location of the plant was right next to the high school in the area. And in that census tract, I believe the quote is about 90% of the kids have asthma. So this is truly,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy amount.
90%?
Yeah. And you hear stories from the organizers there of they just thought it was normal that everyone had asthma, that everyone that they knew growing up had asthma. But it's not. And so this is what we like to call a classic case of environmental racism. And so environmental racism is basically whenever that there are negative like impacts of, you know, of our choices when it comes to our energy sources or where to put pollutants or all of that. Environmental racism is basically when BIPOC and lower class people get the short end of the stick and white people are allowed to live and allowed to breathe clean air. But clean air should be a right for everyone. Everyone has the right to breathe clean air. Mm-hmm. But with the move of this permit and the way that it was done and the lack of community input, it was really, it's environmental racism. It's not okay. You know, these folks that already have to suffer a disproportionate burden of, you know, of these pollutants. So there was a whole campaign organized by folks starting on the southeast side, but it built into a coalition across the city of stopping General Iron. And so we started off, so it was an example of something that we like to call an escalation arc in organizing. So what that means is you start mm-hmm. off slow. You start by, you know, writing a letter to your politician, calling the city, writing some comments, or going to the community input meetings they have and saying, hey, I think this is a bad idea because of these reasons. Like, this is not something that the city should do, like all of that. And then when the city doesn't listen, then you escalate. Then you start, you know, like posting on social media and tagging your politicians. You start having rallies outside of their places of work or their offices. You start being a little bit more aggressive in your messaging. You write op-eds, all of this stuff, building awareness and knowledge of this issue. And then actually in this escalation arc, they weren't getting the attention from the broader media apparatus of Chicago. They weren't getting attention mm-hmm. from the city. They weren't getting the results that they wanted. So they actually went on a hunger strike. So it was four organizers originally. I think it grew to nine. I'm not quite sure of the number. But these folks went without solid food for, I believe, around 30 days to draw attention to the fact that, you know, Mayor Lightfoot and Lightfoot's administration were not denying the permit. They were allowing this polluter to open up in this already overburdened area. And mm-hmm. it was something that really wasn't okay. And so eventually, actually, because of the sacrifice of these hunger strikers and because of this huge campaign to, you know, build pressure on the Lightfoot administration, I was at the protest when we walked around Mayor Lightfoot's house. And as a result of this, Bobby Rush, the representative, like all of these representatives started writing letters to the EPA, the HUD. And so the HUD and mm-hmm. the EPA actually both opened separate investigations, one into investigating whether the city was violating the civil rights and the Fair Housing Act of these Southeast Side residents. And another was basically the EPA basically calling attention to the fact that some of this data in this General Iron permit was slightly didn't look great and needed to be re-reviewed. So initially yeah. the city delayed the permit. And eventually the city did end up denying the permit. So that's an example of something where clear environmental racism, the people of the Southeast Side organized, fought super hard, brought in folks across the city like Sunrise Chicago and other groups to put pressure on the Lightfoot administration, even resorting to a hunger strike to get the result they wanted and get the city to deny the permit. And actually General Iron did try and sue the city for millions of dollars, claiming that they were, you know, they were promised this permit, but the judge threw out the lawsuit. So in the end, a good win for organizing. When we fight, we win.
That's such a moving story. And I it really does show how it is intersectional. It's, yes, it's obviously climate, but it's also, you know, a population that is not, you know, that can be neglected sometimes, for lack of yeah. a better words. So that's really amazing that Sunrise was able to make that happen.
Yeah.
So you have mentioned a lot of really great reasons with intersectionality, why climate change is so vital. But for our listeners specifically, you know, we're mostly young people as well. Why should we care about climate change in Chicago or in some of our big cities?
Yeah. So that's a great
question. I know it's a loaded question.
But. No, it's a great question. And so I guess I would say everything about your daily life is affected by climate change. It will be affected by climate change. So I think the biggest thing that I personally have noticed this summer is it is hot. It is mm-hmm. really, really hot. And especially across, I don't know, there was a heat map a little while back, especially if you're in a Western US city, especially Seattle, there half the homes there don't have AC because they've never needed it. But it was like up to 105 or how, like, it was in the hundreds in Seattle and Portland. And that's something that we can look forward to as climate change is happening. And so those heat waves aren't impactless. When the heat gets that high and you don't have AC and you don't have folks that are used to dealing with this heat, people die from these heat waves. Another example is the Texas freeze. And so the Texas freeze that happened, it was extreme weather. Texas doesn't really experience cold, devastating weather like that. But unfortunately, due to a combination of this sort of extreme weather, which is directly caused by climate change, some places are getting a lot hotter. Some places are getting unexpectedly colder. Some places are getting way more rain than they're used to. Germany just flooded it this past week. Mm-hmm. And there was actually a quote from a woman there. She's like, oh, you think about this climate change, something like this, these floods in Germany happening in poor countries. You don't think about it happening in Germany. And I'm like, that kind of hit the nail on the head, because I think a lot of the time we see some of these climate disasters and we see them happening elsewhere. We see them happening in, you know, Indonesia. We see them happening like drought in Africa. Like, we don't really connect them to our countries. But the thing is, there will be impacts in our countries. There's flooding in Germany. There's tons of flooding in the Midwest this past year, like wildfires out west, like hurricanes on the East Coast. I grew up in New Jersey and we experienced Hurricane Sandy and things like that. If they happen once every 100, 500 years, that's kind of okay. But these are going to start happening basically every year. And so that combined with that, so all these extreme weather events, plus our lack of action on these weather events, and just the state of our infrastructure in this country means that we are just not equipped to handle this. And so if you specifically, kind of like me, you're young, you live in a city, you've never really, I guess, thought too much about climate change's impact on your daily life, things like heat waves can crumble the sidewalks and, you know, make it harder to get around, especially if you're disabled. Like a lot of the times too, like things that contribute to climate change, polluters and polluting industry and all of that, oftentimes gets put in neighborhoods in cities next to folks that are low on the socioeconomic index. And oftentimes they experience worse health effects. They experience, like, you get asthma from being next to a coal plant. It just, or like being next to a polluter that releases chemicals into the air. Like, people, like, you can get, like, a lot of this can really impact your health, as well as, you know, impacting, you know, your livelihood. Like, for example, like some of these extreme weather events, you know, they damage people, they damage buildings. Like, if a flood happens in a place that you thought, you know, was not floodproof, like, you lose your home. And even if you have the money to pay for that, that's still an upheaval. It's still something you have to go and you have to move and you have to figure out your life and pick up the pieces. And all that's to say, there are a lot of these events, especially the extreme weather, the lack of infrastructure, the choices of that are caused by this racialized capitalism of, you know, specifically the pursuit of profit getting in front of the need to provide healthy, safe, and clean environments for all people is something that really, it does affect your daily life, even if you can't directly see it right now. I guarantee you, if you stop and think and start observing your surroundings more, you'll see, like, there's a coal plant next door, or like all these cars, like driving next to me on the street, like, are just loud and smelly, and it's hard to breathe and it's hard to walk around. So
yes. And even just thinking about knowing your surroundings a little bit too, it's like when I notice, like, oh, the sidewalk has a lot of trash on it. And then I see a bird like eating that trash. And then it's like out in Lake Michigan. And then it's like, oh, well, that's affecting like the fish that we'll eat, like all of those. Yeah. It's, you know, just a domino effect.
Exactly.
But thank you for drawing that out for us. If our listeners wanted to get involved with Sunrise Movement or any sort of climate activism, where should they look?
Yeah. So, first of all, I'd say, like, in terms of getting involved with sort of climate activism, climate organizing, the very first thing I'd say before even telling you where to look is anyone can get involved. It does not matter that your level of skill, your level of experience, doesn't matter if you know a lot about the science, you know nothing about the science, you know everything about politics, you know nothing about politics. Everyone has something to contribute to this movement, because, and we call it a movement. We don't call it a group or organization, because That's what this is. This is building active and passive support for stopping climate change among us, the people, and amongst our politicians. And so in terms of specifically getting involved in Sunrise, I'd say that, like, first decide if it's the organization for you, because every single organization, there's a lot of organizations that do similar things, but related things, but every organization is different. And so sometimes people ask me, they're like, Emily, like, why is there this coalition of 50 orgs that are supporting Medicare for All? Why can't they just be all one Medicare for All group? But the thing is, again, organizing is about people and relationships and ideas. And so not everyone can be everything, but a lot of people can support one thing. So decide, you know, hey, like Sunrise being a youth-led movement whose theory of change. And so theory of change is basically saying, how does this group think the world changes? Is their theory of change aligned with how you believe the world changes? Is this something, this group, something that I see myself in, that I consider myself to be a part of? And then use that to narrow down what group you want to join. I will say Sunrise Chicago, we are a youth-led organization working to be a cross-class and cross-race movement of young people to fight for a Green New Deal and to fight for political change and people change to stop climate change while creating millions of good jobs in the process. That's off the website. So first of all, decide if it's for you. Then second of all, Sunrise Chicago specifically, if you've done that work, you decide it's for you. So actually Sunrise is a national movement and they have individual chapters. So if you are not in Chicago, which I assume many of you are not, unlike me, go on to the Sunrise Movement. I think it's sunrisemovement.org, but if you Google Sunrise Movement, it will come up. And then you go there and you can click find a hub. And so the hub, like I mentioned earlier, is just a local chapter of the movement. And then there should be details of how to get in contact with that hub. Some hubs, they're a little smaller. So it'll just be, they'll just email someone and say, hey, want to get involved? Or some hubs have, especially if you're in a big city, have a more formalized intake process. I know for Sunrise Chicago specifically, we have our own website. And you can join our Slack. You can look at events on our calendar and come to. You can honestly follow us on social media because we post a lot about different events or actions or meetings that we have to come to. And those are all ways to get information. But then once you've sort of got that information, the biggest thing is just to show up. Is even if you're like, I don't know anyone here, I don't know what I'm doing, still just show up. Everyone wants you to be there. Everyone is so happy to bring new people in, to support, and to get to know you and to get to understand why you're in this fight and how we can work together to stop climate change. So those are all my tips to get involved.
We will definitely put all of those info and those links in the show notes. And I really appreciate how you say, see if it's the right organization for you, because as you mentioned, it is relationships and it's if you want to have the most impact, maybe if the people around you make you the happiest, then you'll have the best outcome. So I think that's really cool. Emily, this has been an amazing interview. Thank you so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated. We do have a signature question, and it is, what are you opinionated about? It can be about anything.
Oh gosh. I'm the person, again, this, you're the wrong person to ask this to, because I almost have an opinion on everything. So I guess what I'll say is I am very anti-car culture. And look, I know in the suburbs, rural areas, you need cars to get around, but I hate that. I hate cars in general. Like, I think the world would be a better place for, like, in many, many, many different ways if we deprioritized cars, gave less space to cars, invested in our public transit. And so I will go for, so that is sort of the, again, in line with my climate justice activism answer. But then the other part of the answer that I think is a little more wacky, but I think is true, and it's an opinion. I think Americans' fashion senses would be better if we were not obsessed with cars and if we didn't drive everywhere, because when you take public transit, folks see you, there's a little bit more incentive to dress up, look good, maybe you see a cute stranger, although I've never gone up to public transportation and asked them out. But I think, I think Americans' fashion senses would be better if we deprioritized cars and made everyone take public transit. So your move, France.
Honestly, I could see that happening. Yeah. If we didn't care, like, oh yeah, I just need to go to the grocery store and I'm going to just put on these sweatpants because I'm only going to go in for like 10 minutes. But if exactly. it's like, oh no, it's an event. And it, yeah. Yeah. I could definitely get behind that too. Also, cars Thank are you. Just expensive in general.
That's true. It's so true. I mean, I think I spend like on the L every year. If I was commuting to work on taking the train, I'd spend maybe $1,200 a year on a car. I'd easily spend $10,000. Like,
yeah. Just with insurance and everything.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for being on Sit Still Look Opinionated. Thanks so much for talking about Sunrise Movement. And we'll definitely have all those links in the show notes. Or if you want to check out our website, www.sitstillpodcast.com/show notes, we will have everything there as well. Yeah. Emily, do you want to plug anything? Do you want to plug any social media, anything of that nature?
Yeah, totally. So for all of our listeners around the world, I would definitely follow Sunrise Movement. So that's Sunrise MVMT on Twitter. I follow us on Instagram because that's probably like it's a good way to get sort of started in terms of just learning a little bit more about what's going on with Sunrise, as well as what is happening in our political world, the broader climate justice movement, in ways that you can help and easily get involved. You know, maybe you don't want to join a hub or a chapter, but they definitely have one-off events that you can help out with. So I'd highly, highly encourage that. If you are in the Chicago area, please go on the Sunrise Chicago website and join our Slack and learn a little bit more about what we do. Follow us on social media, Sunrise Movement Chai, and we'll be happy to bring you in, answer any questions, help you learn more, because that's what this is all about. It's about growing, it's about people, it's about learning, and it's about showing up to stop climate change. So,
yes, that's amazing. Thanks so much.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And that's all for today's episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on social media at Sit Still Podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and me, Claire Malky, and written by me, Claire Malky, Michael Dritto, Fee Bosanyavichs, Gabriel Skavor, Molly Smith, and Charlie Bain. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter, and royalty-free music from Epidemic Sound. Check out our referral link in the show notes. If you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe to our newsletter at www.sitstillpodcast.com and visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/sitstillpodcast. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi Nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye.